Everyone, welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. Thanks for joining us again this Tuesday night, as we're here every Tuesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. And tonight we have a special guest again. Heather Haupt is with us. Welcome, Heather.
Thanks. So excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. I'm glad that you've been able to take some time out of your crazy schedule. We're going to talk a little bit about what you've had going on lately, which is a lot, but some exciting stuff for our audience to be able to learn about as well. So tonight we're going to talk about movement and why we shouldn't homeschool without it. And you've got some great experience on that, as well as some personal understanding as to how learning needs to happen with movement from your own story. And I kind of like you to start with that and introduce yourself and some of your background and what that's done to make an impact now that you are homeschooling your own children.
Yeah. Well, like you said, my name is Heather Haupt, and I studied neurophysiology in college, really focusing specifically on the science of how the brain learns. Mm-hmm. And I think I was drawn to that in many ways because of my childhood. And so my homeschool journey actually began back in the mid 80s, and I was in first grade. And I did great in preschool, great in kindergarten, and then in first grade, I hit a wall. And my mom just saw my personality start to change. I was starting to shut down, and just sort of that sparkle was gone, that love for learning. And actually, it was so bad, I was unlearning how to read. And so I had started learning how to read in kindergarten, and I regressed in first grade. Mm-hmm. And so she was just looking at this like a concerned parent going, what's going on? And and so she came down and sat in the back of the classroom, and she saw that I was in the very back corner. And about 10, 15 minutes into the class, into the morning, I just started to get a little squirmy and wiggly. And I got up quietly and did a lap around my desk and sat back down. And she thought, huh, that's a little odd. Waited and just sort of kept watching because she was just there to observe. Mm-hmm. And about 10 to 15 minutes later, I just start getting wiggly and I'm just, and she can tell I'm trying really hard to sit still. And I finally got to the point where I could not sit still anymore. And I made another lap around my desk. Well, this sequence went on all morning long. And so at lunch, my mom just sort of pulled the teacher aside and said, you know, I noticed that Heather gets up and walks around. Is that okay? Is there a problem here? And she goes, oh, Mrs. Lewis, there is not a problem here. Heather is not distracting any of the other kids. And I wasn't. The teacher was, bless her heart, she put me in the back and she allowed me the freedom to get up and move. Mm-hmm. But the problem was I was so far away from the action that I wasn't learning anything. And I spent my day focusing on trying to be good. Mm-hmm. And so I missed everything that was being taught. And so that, combined with just some other things, prompted my parents to make the radical decision way back in the dark ages to pull me out and try homeschooling. And it was supposed to just be for a semester. They were going to teach me how to read. And we just sort of kept going one year at a time until it became a lifestyle. And I look back and I am so, so very grateful because my mom taught me how to sit still. In fact, we used to joke that if I had been born any later, I probably would have been put on Ritalin, diagnosed ADHD. And it was before there was a whole lot of awareness on that. And she let me sort of grow up a little. She gave me room to move and then taught me how to sit still for those times where I do need to sit still. So whenever people hear my story, they're like, no, you? Maybe until they get to know me a little better. Cause I actually came back to my mom as an adult and I said, you know, that whole, I would have been put on Ritalin if I had been in school. I think I actually do have ADHD. Mm-hmm. She goes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she just, I don't know. I grew up thinking I was completely normal, whatever normal means. I loved that I was able to flourish and move and that she made accommodations, but then moved me towards being able to function like everybody else does.
Yeah. And you
And so
know,
that
that's
sort
the
of just,
beauty of homeschool too, is I think, you know, parents don't realize, and if you're on the fence about homeschooling, you're such a perfect example that kids in school know they're different, but parents who nurture that, like your mom did, allow you to be, that's your normal, and it's okay. And you don't think that it's any different, and this is just the way I am. And well, how beautiful is that?
I know. And so, yeah. And so it was when I was an adult, when I'm comfortable in my own skin, where I'm like, oh, yeah, there's some little things that are a little different about me. And I'm aware of that and I know how to work with it.
Because you can slow yourself down now as an adult. As a child, it's always happening so fast that things are coming at you and you haven't been trained how to handle them. And kids on the autism spectrum, you know, are the same way. I know with my oldest, who's almost 22, I mean, I know when he's anxious, yet he can hide it from other people. And because he's learned. And I think we expect kids to learn too quickly how to do things like that, like sit still. And as we're going to talk about tonight, they just like some of them can do it, but maybe they're like forcing themselves to, and others, there is no way that's possible.
And so, and it just that I think led me into researching this whole realm, and I just started to discover the beauty of movement and how movement is essential for all of us, for everyone, in the learning process. But it's essential. It is just absolutely essential for some of our kiddos. And so
Definitely.
once we learn to recognize and tune into that, then we're able to look and go, how can we make our home a place, a haven for learning that facilitates this and gives our children the freedom to move and engage their bodies in the
I
process?
love that word haven. Definitely. I mean, some people think of it as, you know, we're protecting our kids, but in a way, we kind of have to for them to be able to be comfortable in their own skin. And yet, it's not like we're isolating them. It's just giving them that freedom, like you talked about. So I want to let our viewers know that we are taking questions throughout our discussion. So if you have a comment or a question, just throw them up. We'll throw them on the screen in between as we're talking. But we want to dive into why first, as to why movement? Why do we need movement? You know, we talked about those squirmy kids, but there's some science behind this. And you have some things to share with us to help us get a better understanding of the why. And it's not just because our kids are squirmy that we need to add this movement. There's a whole lot more.
I think it's important to understand why so that we can embrace the need to move. Because there are so many times where we want our kids to power through and they just can't. And so
Mom's having a bad day.
understanding why and how the brain works is really helpful. And so when we recognize that movement is critical in just even the formation of our neurons, from expanding them and helping them to connect with everything, movement is essential in laying down a sort of a nerve net, an experience net where the brain is interconnected. And that helps facilitate our ability to think and our ability to process. And that nerve network is laid down when we start to move and explore our
Isn't that
environment. So it
amazing?
starts with babies, it starts in the brain stem and just sort of spreads out from there as a child explores their environment. And so we want to
That's
give
great.
our children freedom to do that. I love the fact that movement also increases the production of a neurotransmitter called dopamine. And dopamine is responsible for feelings of elation and excitement. And so when we move, we release dopamine and we get excited about what we're doing. And that's what we want as parents, is for our children to be engaged, to be connected, and to be excited about what they're learning. And as we move our bodies and interact with our environments, we're able to do that. And that is facilitated. And so I love how our brains are wired in that way. And then specifically, I wanted to talk about something called vestibular stimulation.
Yes, now you have
And
some slides,
so
so I'm
I
gonna
do.
throw those up as soon as I change the screen here.
So I'll keep
There's a
talking.
lot of things.
Vestibular stimulation is just the vestibular system is housed in the inner ear. And so it is really, it's the gateway to the brain for the senses. And so everything that we see, touch, taste, smell, hear is funneled through the inner ear. And so that's where when we, every move we make, it strengthens those connections. And so I don't know about you, but my kids have always sort of loved to throw themselves off balance a little bit. It's why kids like hanging upside down from monkey bars. It's why they like to sort of walk
Trampolines and
across,
yes.
walk across uneven rocks. And so all of those things are serving to orient the body of where am I at in space? And it's strengthening those connections going into the brain. And so anytime we can strengthen those connections, strengthen the connections between what we're experiencing, what we're touching, and making that brain-body connection, it's going to help facilitate learning and make that easier. And so, every time our kids do this, they're wiring their brain to learn. And so when I started to understand that, it revolutionized how I viewed my kids' playtime when they were at the playground
Definitely,
and when they're out
yes.
climbing trees. And instead of going, oh, that's just child's play, or maybe, oh, that's good for their emotional health, I recognized that it was also good for their brain health and their mental health.
Definitely. And just for future learning, not even them, but what they're building on. It's the kind of the groundwork.
And then also movement helps facilitate a fancy word called bilateral integration, which is just the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere of the brain communicating with one another. And so we've all talked about how people are maybe more right-brained or more left-brained, but the reality is we need our mind to be able to communicate. And we can communicate or we can function at a higher level when those connections are in place. And so I always go back to the whole idea of crawling. And I know a lot of us have heard the idea that a kid should crawl, a baby should crawl before they walk. And there's, at least when my kids were that age, no one actually ever explained that to me. Why? They were just like, oh, they need to
I don't
crawl. I'm
think there
like,
was
well,
any
why?
science back
If
then.
they move to walk, like, what's the big deal? And yet, what we're seeing as scientists researching this more and more is that crawling facilitates these connections between the brain. So there's this little part between the brain called the corpus callosum, and when a child begins to crawl and coordinate one half of his body with the other half through movement, he's strengthening those connections. And when those connections
It's
are in place,
amazing.
it helps make learning so much easier, specifically areas like reading comprehension, learning how to read. In fact, reading specialists used to say that if a child couldn't brachiate on the monkey bars, they weren't ready to learn how to read.
Really? That's amazing.
Which again, it's just, and I don't even know if they necessarily knew the brain science behind it, or if that was just they understood that those two things coincided. But if you have the coordination to not just go bar by bar, but to swing and coordinate your body to do that, that signified that there was advanced wiring between the two connections of the brain. And so this is just, it's a game changer. And what we're seeing a lot of
Definitely.
times in occupational therapy, and things like that is that we are going back to doing activities that cross that midline and that foster, that strengthen those connections. And that's again where we go back to play. Anytime we're seeing our kids skipping or crawling on the floor, roughhousing, those kind of things require a coordination between the two sides of the body, which is wiring the brain to learn.
Yeah, and
And
if
so
those
those are.
aren't there, then parents are building them in later on to just catch up. And so how important that is early on in life. And yeah, for so long we didn't know that. And now we're catching up again.
We are. And so that is another big one. And so these, again, they make learning easier. And that's what we want to do for our kids. We want to facilitate an environment that is going to really just help them thrive. And so a lot of times I've had kids that have been struggling on reading, and we take a break. I turn to audiobooks, so that they're hearing things. So I'm reading aloud to them a lot. They're hearing books, if I don't always have time to read to them. So I did more audiobooks with my younger two because by that point I was busy homeschooling my older two. And so I wasn't able to just sit on the couch and read all day. But those kind of things build in that love of reading. And then when I saw that there were challenges, that's where we would increase, like, okay, let's go climb some trees today. And I'm going to have you see if you can crawl to your room and back. And time you, and just things that got them up and really coordinating those two sides of the brain.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, Faith. Let's see if I can put this up here. Faith says, thank you for sharing this much needed information for parents. Yes, definitely. This is definitely much
Good.
needed information because I think we always get the questions, well, what curriculum should I use? I'm like, wait, let's not talk about
Back up.
curriculum. Let's talk about what you're doing in your homeschool. And this is so good
Right.
because,
In fact, I was actually joking with a friend 2 weeks ago, and oh no, I am going to mute my phone.
oh, I
Okay,
forgot
sorry,
mine
that was my
online
phone that I
too.
didn't mute. Where was I going? And she's like, what if you had to use this curriculum? What would you do? And I gave her a horrified look because I knew it would just not be a good fit for my kids. And I'm not going to name it so I don't vilify anybody out there who's using it. We all use different things and you use what works. But I just looked at her and I said, you know what? I'd make it work for me. And that's really the key. And when you have kids that need more movement than others, you make it work.
Yeah,
So,
definitely. You just kind of
yeah.
go along with what your kids need. And as a parent, we need to be as much of a steward student of our children as our children are a student of their education and what we're teaching them, because we do need to modify and accommodate based on their needs. And paying
Yes.
attention is so important to doing that. We can't just plow through and expect that just because the curriculum was written well or it's per some standards that we're going to get to the end and everything's going to be okay. You need to be
Yeah.
validating that in between. So,
Yep. Well, and I think sometimes as homeschool parents, we can feel insecure and think that we have to do everything that's in the curriculum. And we fail to recognize that teachers don't do everything that's in the curriculum, and they personalize it as best they can to their classroom. And so we have an even greater opportunity to personalize it to the needs of our individual children. And so if
Definitely.
something's not working,
Yeah.
stop.
Yeah, exactly. Your video is not keeping up. I'm getting your audio though. Just
Oh,
I
I
don't know
see.
if
I am
there's
frozen.
you're frozen, but I am getting audio and I'm hoping everybody else is hearing what I'm hearing. So we can keep going on. Are you able to see?
I can see.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully your camera will catch up. So we can just go from there. We want to go on to the next slide. I don't
Yes.
have to figure out what it is.
So we've talked about vestibular stimulation, bilateral integration. I wanted to talk also about how movement activates muscle memory.
Yes.
And this is
Very important.
important because when we recognize that there is a fully engaged body, when we fully engage our children's bodies, the brain is better utilized and that learning sticks. And that's what we want to do is we want to look and go, okay, let's embrace our children as holistic people. I'm moving my hands and imagining you're seeing my hands move. We want to view our children holistically and recognize them not just as a mind that is learning, but there is a soul there, there is a heart, and they have a physical body, and their physical body needs to move. And when they do that, it facilitates the learning. And so I read an interesting, fascinating study on rats. And what they were wanting to look at is how movement or the effect of environment on neurological development. And so they took one group of rats and they put them in a cage with just the basics of life, food and water. And then they enclosed the cage so they couldn't see out. So there was no outside stimulation. And they let that group of rats grow up. And then they took the second group of rats, they put in a cage with all kinds of gizmos and toys and wheels and mazes, in addition to food and water, and let them grow up in a really enriched environment. And then they took a third group of rats and they put them in a cage with the basics of life, food and water, and they pushed this cage right up next to that middle cage. And so this group of rats got to watch all of the interesting action that was going on. So just think of it like 24/7 educational Netflix or YouTube.
Right.
Like you're getting to see
So you need
lots
to
of
see
cool
it for
things.
right,
You
but
just
not
don't get to
immediately.
participate in it. And so they let these three group of rats grow up, and then they went and looked at their brains. And what they found with the first group was no surprise. Those brains were shriveled and small and underdeveloped. And we see that when an animal, or goodness, on super rare occasions and awful occasions, a person is sensory deprived, completely deprived, it permanently stunts their development. But, oh, that's funny. There was the
I
rest of
think
my
your
house.
camera switched around now.
Okay,
There,
I'm back.
we've got you back.
And I'm so glad I sort of cleaned up that part of the house. So that was the first group, underdeveloped brains. The second group of rats, they went and looked at those, and again, the results did not surprise them at all. These brains were fat and juicy and full of all kinds of connections. So they could tell these were really healthy brains, and these rats were in a good place. And then they went and looked at that third group, and their hypothesis was that these brains would be somewhere sort of in between the first two. But closer to that middle group because they were able to witness everything. They weren't sensory deprived from a sight standpoint. And what they found surprised them. Those brains, while better than the first group, were nowhere near as healthy or developed as that middle group. And so their takeaway was that environment matters, and being able to physically move and to participate in their environment makes a difference. And so we're seeing this on lots of other fronts as well, is that when a child is fully participating in their environment, when their senses are engaged, when they're allowed to move, learning is facilitated. And so it's just a reminder to not just, and I'm not vilifying YouTube or Netflix, I utilize that. In our homes from time to time, but we don't want that to be their only experience, is interacting with a screen. It's just, it's not the same.
It's not the hands-on, yes, the movement-oriented learning like you were talking about, definitely. That's
It's
amazing.
something we have to remind ourselves of, because it would be so much easier to watch a dissection on on the internet than to actually bring something
A
into
lot
our
less
home.
messy too.
But knowing the value, we can go, okay, we're gonna do this. We're gonna embrace this mess for the moment because we
Exactly.
recognize the power there. So.
Definitely. Let the mess happen. It will disappear some year. I mean, I kind of miss those messes now. I was writing something about what we did for active learning, because our whole focus this month is on active learning. So every blog that's coming out this month and all of our interviews are going to be talking about active learning. And I just remember the obstacle courses and the forts that took over my house. And now I'm thinking the dog's the only one that leaves toys out anymore. But it is a sweet time in your life to have those
It
things.
is. It is. And we need those reminders. So thank you.
Yes.
My
They do
house is
go right
loud and
away.
messy.
Yes.
Oh.
Definitely.
So, and then going along with the whole idea of muscle memory, I think it's really important to just recognize the benefits of moving. And actually, moving our bodies, moving our hands helps solidify things into long-term memory. And so if you can get up and do something physical, it's going to create stronger memories than if you just read about it or if you just engaged something with one sense. In fact, I was reading a fascinating study of college students, and they looked at the difference between writing physical notes and going with taking notes on your computer. And they found that when you took notes with your computer, you did not remember as much compared to handwriting out notes. And part of it is when you are hearing something, you're hearing so much information coming in. If you're writing it down, you can't write everything down. It's
Oh,
not
so you
physically
have to
possible to do that. So
rephrase
your
it.
brain has to be fully engaged and synthesize what it's hearing and then go, what is something I can write down so that I can remember this?
Right.
And so that's where just the physical act of writing is going to have a more powerful impact than typing. And again, I'm not vilifying typing because there's a time and a place for each, but there is something very powerful about getting our bodies up and moving. So,
Definitely.
yeah. And then finally, I just wanted to mention with the how is how movement boosts oxygen to the brain. And so
Yes.
there is just such a strong, 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 strong connection between the brain and the heart. And it's because the brain
Really?
uses 20% of the oxygen that we take in with every breath. And so it's an oxygen hog. And
That
so
would make so much
without,
sense. I couldn't breathe a couple weeks ago on the end of my broadcast, and I'm like trying to breathe in, and I'm like, I can't even think. So I understand that
which is why, like, if you hold your breath too long, there are occasions where someone can black out by holding their breath too long because their brain just isn't getting enough oxygen. And so we want to look at that and keep that in mind. And so I always use the idea of screensaver mode. So when you're not using your computer goes to sleep and the screensaver pops up. It goes dark. It is not doing work for you. It is not being actively engaged. And I don't know about you, but I see it all the time in my kids where they go into what I call screensaver mode, where the
Oh
lights
yeah.
are on.
And you're going, "Hello."
And no one's home. My kids now will call me on it. They're like, "Mom, you're in screensaver mode." And so we all do that. And what we need in that moment is our brain needs more oxygen and we need to move. And so even just physically getting up and going and getting a glass of water, going to the bathroom, doing something even as simple as that just helps to wake up the brain because we're taking a deeper breath, we're getting up and moving, and it's just pumping that extra boost of oxygen up to the brain. And then related to that is the whole idea of exercise. When we are more physically fit, our heart, even at a resting level, is pumping more oxygen, which means our
It's
brain
kind
is
of
getting
better
more
comparison.
oxygen. Yeah, and it's able to function. And so making those connections is really, really important. There was a school, I think it was in Atlanta, and they just had a classroom of boys that were really, really, really struggling. And I think they were all failing math. And so they were looking at this, going, what do we do? How can we help this group? And so they started reading some of the research on the connection between movement and exercise and brain health. And so they took the hardest class, which was math, and they moved it right to the hour after PE. And then they instructed the PE teacher to run them really hard. And so these boys, they were worked hard. They were out of breath, just feeling that euphoria that you get when you exercise. And they went to math class and they watched these kids' math scores start to climb. And so there's a huge connection between getting up and moving and then being able to focus. And so I don't know
Definitely.
about you, but every time I hear that, the wheels in my head start to turn and I go, how can I capitalize on this in my home? And so where are my kids struggling right now? And is there something where maybe I can introduce having my kids are old enough that I can have them go run around the block without me. And so I'll say, okay, go for a run. I'm going to time you and we'll see how long it takes you to get back. But they come in and they are just excited and they're out of breath and they're able to sit down and do whatever it is that they needed to do.
Yeah, we used to do stairs. I mean, we lived in Minnesota. We had snow 6 months of the year. So it was like whatever indoor things we could do to get some energy going and yeah, or just chores in general on a farm.
Yep.
But yeah,
Chores work.
it's you definitely they just need those set times during the day. And after lunch is the worst because that's when their body's processing their food and they're sleepy and you definitely aren't going to get much learning in there.
No, not anything that requires focus. So yeah, so I wanted to sort of lay that foundation. I obviously didn't go into great detail, but knowing the why and knowing how
So
important it
important.
is to move helps us to take that next step to go, okay, well, how can we incorporate more movement into our day?
Right. So yeah, so now we're going to do the how because if you've been watching, we understand now why, because there's so much going on. And even if your child doesn't exhibit those things about, being squirmy or not paying attention, they can still benefit from this, from adding
Yes.
movement. You're not going to hurt your child in any way by doing movement for everyone in the family.
No. We all need it. Some of us just need it more than the others.
Even mom needs it. I remember
Yes.
falling asleep in the afternoon trying to read an out loud book and my kids poking me. So, yes. I could have used some exercise as well.
For sure. Okay, well, let's jump into some of the hows, unless
Yeah,
there's questions that have come up.
yeah. And so if you're just joining us, know that you can add questions, you can add comments. We'll definitely be addressing those as we're going along, but we're going to jump into the how and go from there. So if you want to go back to the why, if maybe you're just joining us, you want a little recap, we can do that as well. Otherwise, you'll be able to watch this whole video when we're done, and it'll be up for an indefinite amount of time as well. So, yeah.
Perfect.
All right.
So, yeah, well, let's dive into how we can utilize movement to maximize learning.
Definitely.
So, yeah, and so with that, we want to allow for full engagement of the senses, the emotions, and movement. And so recognize that our children's emotions factor into their mental health, factor into their need to move. And that as we engage our sen the senses, we're going to be able to maximize learning.
We don't often think about that as movement. We're
No.
always thinking large body things. Yet this is something that you can add in to many more different facets of learning than just the large motor type skills. So that's good that you point that out, that these are other things that get a child, out of that stationary mode, I guess is kind of what we're looking at versus what
Right.
we're thinking as like, my child's jumping up and down, so now we're engaging their movement, but it can be very simple too. I never even thought of anything like that.
Yeah. Which actually is sort of encouraging because I think sometimes we tend to think, because when we have those really wiggly children, I think there's a fear that we have to have everything be frenetic, and it doesn't need to be frenetic. It needs to be purposeful. And we need to sort of be keeping an eye towards switching things up. But even just having them, I mean, one of my favorites was watercoloring. My kids would watercolor, and it would bring any stress levels down in our home. I would read aloud, they would paint, and it got their bodies moving, but it wasn't frenetic. And yeah, so even just recognizing that there's different ways that we can do this is helpful.
Definitely. So true.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to share a graph. So as we're looking at
Yes.
this, we want to recognize the importance of active versus passive learning. And this is just, this is such a key distinction. And if you can just have that rolling around in the back of your mind as you're going through your day of how can I convert passive learning into active learning? That is just a huge game changer. And so I have this chart. I can't tell if you have it up yet or not.
Yep, I do. And
Perfect.
yeah, and I know it's on your brain boosting. We'll share that link too. So if you want to go back and look at this more closely, it's on Heather's website as well.
Yeah, I can even share that link. Oh no, I gave it to you
Yeah,
already. Okay,
I've got
so
it, so I can share it too.
yeah, active versus passive learning. People generally remember about 10% of what they read. 10%, that's not much.
No, that's not.
But 20% of what they hear. And so when you are bringing that in to the equation, you're amplifying what they're able to learn. 30% of what they see when they're viewing images, when they're watching videos. So again, you wouldn't want the videos or images to be the primary because you're just not able to give as much information as you would, as you could through a book. But when you combine these things, that's where the magic is at. So reading to your kids, talking to your kids, letting them hear you, especially for your audio learners, letting them hear books read out loud can be really helpful. They remember 30% of what they see, 50% of what they see and hear. So when they're able to attend an exhibit where they're able to walk around and to see it, again, they're moving, they're seeing, they're hearing. It amplifies what they're able to do and what they're able to retain. 70% of what they say and write. So what you're seeing here again is just an increase in engagement in whatever it is that they're doing. So instead of just passively looking at an exhibit, if you're able to build something where there's a co collaboration, where you're doing some kind of hands-on activity, that's going to really amplify things. And then 90% of what they do. So when you build a model, design a project, something, again, your child is completely immersed and engaged in what they're doing. And so you're not going to do that last one and make everything a hands-on project.
That's impossible.
That's impossible.
You can move closer to that for a lot of things, though.
Right. So I like to think of it as sort of the frosting on the cake. So just the decoration that you add at the end. And so you're going to throw these in here and there, and they're going to amplify things. But you don't have to make everything a hands-on big production. But doing it periodically really helps to solidify and amplify what they're learning, what they're retaining. It releases that neurotransmitter dopamine and gives them a really deep sense of satisfaction in what they have done. And so as we can do that and look for opportunities to do that, our children are really going to thrive.
Yeah, and it does it kind of, well, and I know you've done a lot of unit studies too, and unit studies are so good with this, is they can give us ideas on how to do that when we aren't so creative ourselves. To take that the other things that they've learned, that they've listened to, and the things that they've watched, and to have an activity that does bind that and give them something to do active that makes them be creative. I know
Yeah.
I had one child that wanted to build everything, and the other one wanted to make costumes and wear them all over. And it was just it was that way that they integrated. And I mean, even now that they're adults, they talk about these things. They do. They remember them well because they were engaged with them. They probably don't remember
Yeah.
what they did in math class, on a worksheet,
Any given day. Yeah, but there's even ways to bring movement into that. And so I think even just sort of, so how do we do this? How do we make active learning or passive learning active? It can be as simple as standing instead of sitting. Standing instead of sitting. So instead of just sitting down at a desk all the time to write out notes, or to do their math lessons, move them to your kitchen countertop where it's higher. I mean, people pay hundreds of dollars for standing desks, and you have a standing desk built right into your kitchen. And so
Right.
have
This
them
is that room
stand
on your
up to
toes.
do their math, where they can just sort of sway their bodies and move as they're doing things, and their brain is going to be engaged at a deeper level simply because they're standing up.
A great idea.
Yeah, I learned my multiplication tables by marching around the kitchen table. And my mom tried everything to help me master my multiplication tables, and it was just a no-go. I still did not know them. And finally, she got me up, and I would just march. 2 times 2 is 4. 4 times 4 is 16. And I would just literally stamp those into my memory as I marched around the kitchen table. And for me, that's what I needed. She didn't do that with everybody, but she tried some of the things that she had going, and that wasn't working. And so she's like, okay, march it. And you know what? That stuck with me. I remember being in college and putting things on note cards that I needed to memorize, and I would walk the campus and just walk and review and talk to myself. I'm sure everybody thought I was totally nuts, but I was so absorbed in what I was doing, I didn't care. But the thing is, those actions that I did in my growing up years, where my mom was like, march it around the table, I subconsciously took into adulthood. And I utilized those same tips that she had done with me to help myself learn in different contexts.
Yeah, they are life skills we're teaching our kids. They aren't just, tricks to get something into them. I see my kids doing the same things, in their own lives now. Whether it's making lists or putting a reminder that they, need to do this or whatever, because they don't remember naturally. But those are the types of things that we again, we are our child's student. We can observe them and then we can teach them. These are places that you kind of don't naturally do so well in. So here's some things let's try together. And you find out what works, and it's through trial and error. And you have to give grace to yourself through the process, but you do learn. And it's by listening to people like Heather who have been there that have great ideas on how to help you to get started.
Another one of my favorites is having your kids talk instead of just listening. And I don't know about you, but I like to talk. And there are times where I can just be totally talking to my kids, talking their ear off, and they are not, they just tuned out. And yet, if we turn the tables on them and say, hey, you tell me what you just read about, and we give them the opportunity to be the teacher, that's where learning flourishes. And so, because if
Definitely.
they can explain it to somebody else, that signifies that they have understood it at a deeper level. And it means that they're going to have to sort of wrestle with what they have just read or what they have just seen or what they've just heard so that they can explain it. And so this is one of my favorites because it's easy, it's not messy, and
Definitely not.
it can really give me a clear view of how well they understand something.
It's an on-the-spot evaluation, and they'll see it naturally if they struggle or if they can clearly explain it as well. I know my daughter was asked to teach a class on how to do three-dimensional drawing, and she came back to me afterwards and she said, "I really don't explain things well." And so I didn't even have to say anything to her. She just naturally said, I get this that I don't do that as well as I thought I did."
Which is huge to have the self-awareness to do that, but you don't develop that self-awareness unless you sort of put yourself out there and try to explain things. So, yeah, so I love that one. And then there's sort of what we were alluding to at the end, that project-based approach. So, what is something that you guys can do together? I was reading, a mother shared about her high school son who is. He started his own business and he built this cool like bike system that hauls everything around. And I'm just looking, going, oh my gosh, the engineering skills required to create that I mean, maybe it's just engineering is not how my brain is wired. So I have immense appreciation for things that I am not good at and I don't get. But you look at that, and that child was so incredibly engaged because there was a purpose to it. He was creating something, he was involved, and it was going to be used for something. And so, bringing our kids into that, having them plan a family vacation with you, giving them a budget, those kind of things, they're going to be just applying what they've learned at a deeper level because they're invested in it. It's going to be an experience they're going to get to embark on, building something together. So, any kinds of projects like that are going to be a win. And then one of my favorites, and this is my go-to way for making learning hands-on, is dramatization and using the imagination. And I think a lot of times we sort of limit, oh, imaginative play to little kids, but it doesn't just have to be little kids. Anytime you're getting up and you're acting something out, you are solidifying things into long-term memory. And you can
Definitely.
do this with everything. I remember last year, 2 years ago, I don't know, a year or two ago, we were studying some chemistry and physics with my kids were all younger. I think I had a seventh grader on down at that point. And we were talking about the three states of water and that it can be liquid, gas, or
The solid.
liquid, gas, or solid. And so we started exploring the atoms, and we went out front because I'm like, okay, well, I want even my littlest to remember this, and we acted it out. That,
Love
we
that.
sort of we connected, but we moved in fluid motion as a little train when we were liquid water. When we were gas, everybody got to go their own way and act crazy. And then when we were solid, we all came together and froze. And you know what? Even my youngest, who was 4 or 5 at the time, like she was able to tell her dad about it that night at dinner because we had acted it out. And so that's where, when we're studying something in history, we act it out. And if your kids don't like physically dramatizing, although I really think that's better because you're getting the whole bodies up and moving, I've had my kids do it with Legos, where they'll create a Lego scene and then they'll move the figures. I mean, I really would prefer them getting their whole bodies up and into the action. But if they're in a phase where they don't like that, or dramatization is a no-go in your house, finding other ways to have them demonstrate that, again, just takes that passive learning opportunity and you just turned it on its head and made it active.
Yeah, well, I found too when we did that, my kids would start asking me questions because they put themselves in these places and they're like, well, why did they do that? And because when they were listening, they weren't thinking about why the person was doing the specific actions, like we were talking about in World War, I think it was when the Russians joined, I think World War II, they were talking about how they had to go out in the field and pick the guns off the dead bodies because there weren't any. And so my son looks at me and he goes, "You mean they had really did that?" I was like, "Yeah, they did." And it really sunk into him just how desperate they were. Because he acted it out. And yet, if you read through something like that, you just go, oh, yeah, that happened. But when your kids engage, they, especially with like historical reaction or reenactments and things like that, they put themselves in that story. And oftentimes in history, we don't do that. We just think about dates and people. And we understand why they did the things they did because otherwise we can judge that, those things so easily. And yet
So it develops empathy,
it
which,
does.
goodness, in this day and age, we need a lot more of.
Definitely. Oh, I love those points. Yes, definitely all those things. I love that standing idea. That's an easy one. Everybody can add. And all these other things too. It really doesn't take a lot. Just maybe a little planning and maybe a little being a little spontaneous at times as well.
Yeah, well, like you said earlier, just watching your kids, and when your kids are tuning out, that's just sort of an indicator like, oh, we need to mix things up. And so mixing things up can be simple, or you can sort of throw them a curveball and make something super interactive. But those are just sort of going to be those rare, surprising times. Oftentimes, there's really a lot of simple solutions.
So speaking of curveballs, let's talk about brain breaks because we got 10 minutes left and I definitely want to cover that and your brain breaks, the ultimate brain breaks that you have. And then I want to talk a little bit about your website too and your new curriculum.
Awesome. Yes. So brain breaks came about. This was my area of research in college, and I'm so embarrassed that I was not living this out. But that's sometimes what happens. We know better and we just get
Yes.
in the
Yeah.
thick of life. And so I remember one time I was working on my son on a math, no, spelling lesson, and he was just dawdling and taking forever. And at that time we lived across the street from a charter school. And so this was not one of my finer moments of parenting, but I just put my hands on my hip and I pointed out that window and I said, if you were in school, you'd be sitting at a desk from 8 in the morning until 2 every afternoon, and I'm asking for 20 minutes. And I could see in his eyes, he's just like, there goes mom. And he's tuning me out and just waiting for my rant to be over. And that's when it hit me. I'm like, oh my gosh, he can't push through. He cannot push through. He needs to get up. And so I just, in my very best army sergeant voice, I said, stand up and give me 20 jumping jacks. And he just sort of looked at me and was like, what? And I said, you heard me, private, stand up and give me 20 jumping jacks. And it actually took him a while. He did some wimpy ones and I was unrelenting. And he did it. And then he sat down and pounded through the last 5 minutes of his spelling lesson. Whew. And I could let him go outside and play. And I remember just sitting there going, wait, I know better. I know better. He just needed to get up and move. And our kids just, I think we forget that they can't power through. Sometimes as adults we can, but our kids can't. And so I sat down because I just knew jumping jacks every day would not work. And
Yeah,
so
you gotta mix it up.
I started going, okay, what can I do? And so I jotted down a list of ideas. And it was really fun. I went back to my research and what is going to cross their midline and wake up those connections between the two hemispheres of the brain. What is going to stimulate their vestibular system? What's going to get the oxygen pumping? And so I put together a group of 60 brain break activities that I could cut out and put in a jar. You can see in that picture up there. Here's my jar here. I think I might be frozen right now.
You're frozen again, unfortunately.
And it was a game changer. Suddenly, it wasn't me against my son. It was, oh, well, you're not focused right now. Here's something we can do about it. And it was quick, 1 to 3 minutes, because if we let him go outside to take a break, we can never get them back.
Exactly.
I've been there, done that. And so I needed something that was quick so that we could come back and finish. And I found that this has been so beneficial in our home, and my kids have grown to start to be able to read themselves and go, oh, I'm not focused right now, but I know what to do about it.
I
I
love
know what to do
that.
about it. And so that's where I put together the Ultimate Guide to Brain Breaks. So if you look at that next slide, those are just some of the different ones that are in the book. And so the book goes much deeper into the science of how movement wires the brain to learn, and then how we can utilize quick movement breaks to help children focus, and then how we can help equip them to recognize that so that they can put that to practice
Exactly.
in their own lives without needing our help with that. And so, yeah, and so all that just, I think it comes back to, movement. We need movement in our day, and when we do that, we
Definitely.
diverse when you diversify your approach and you include movement, you're going to see that your children are going to have their learning maximized and they're really going to
Yes,
begin to flourish. We just sort of have to think a little outside the box.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's not way outside the box either. It's, you know,
No.
it's not like throw everything out the window. You need to just
Nope.
be active all the time. But you made it doable. Definitely. And I hope our viewers are taking that away. So, yeah. So you've got a coupon code for $2 off your Ultimate Brain Breaks. And that's Move 2019. And so your new website, cultivatedlearning.org, I want to bring that up. This is what it looks like. So tell us a
Yeah,
little bit
we.
about how this came about, and then we're going to talk about your new curriculum before we get into
Yeah.
that as
So,
well.
I wrote another book on parenting boys, which I actually talk a lot about movement because goodness, boys need to move. And so that sort of broadened what I was writing about beyond just homeschooling. And so we wanted a space that was dedicated to focusing on homeschooling, focusing especially on homeschooling the younger years. And then my mom and I are releasing a curriculum, hopefully by the end of the month. We're working through all the last minute kinks called Go Global.
There it is.
And so Go Global is I'm just so excited about this. It is a literature-heavy, movement-rich curriculum. And so when I speak, a lot of times people are asking me, like, what curriculum should I use that will give us these ideas? Because I just don't want to come up with these movement
I
ideas.
know, I'm not very creative
And
either.
there's just not many options out there. And so we wanted to bring something. And so they would always ask, well, what are you using? What curriculum is that? And so I would just have to explain, well, I made it up, but if you add dramatization and if you get your kids up doing this, and so anyway, I'm just so excited because this just walks you through how do you have deep conversations with your kids? How do you find, what does it look like to find really good books? And we give you some amazing books to read to your kids that are going to ignite their imagination. And then there's movement. There's movement that's included. So we can move, we can help them move their bodies so they can cement that into long-term memory. And so one of the things that we brought to print is my Go Global game. And so I created it. It was a tutorial on Pinterest where you could make, but you learn your continents, your oceans, and then just so many other map play through playing Twister. So it's a Twister style game where you just get your body up and moving around on the map
Great idea.
and just solidifying in what you're reading about in your books, what you're talking about as a family, and projects that you're engaging in. So that's
Great.
my new baby that I'm just
And the
super
ages
excited
were like
about.
5 to 8, I think, that were
Yeah.
recommended. But you know, if you have a slower learner or a child with a cognitive disability, you can definitely stretch that into much older
Oh,
children.
yes. Yeah.
So, and making it more active, especially for kids who have disabilities, especially mental disabilities, that it's so very important because those connections are harder for them to make. And so using a curriculum with
Right.
activities like this, you know, and it can be modified if they aren't physically able to do everything as well. But
Yeah.
it's a
And I
great
think one
option
of,
though, because I think we're
yeah.
going more towards computerized, and parents always come to us, so what can I get on the computer so we can just take it, you know, wherever we want to go? And that's a nice option for part of the time, but you know, as we you know, all the evidence you're sharing with us and the research, that is definitely not the way you want to go full time with teaching your
Right. Well,
kids.
and for those of us that have children that have learning challenges, I think it's important to not solely focus on skill building. And so when we focus on skill building, I think our kids can feel less than when they are not. Oftentimes, our kids that have learning challenges, they're just gifted and wired in different ways. And so when we can focus on learning about interesting things, that is where we see these kids just come alive. And so
Definitely.
giving our
So
kids those
true.
opportunities to learn about interesting things and to engage in the world around them is going to also just be a huge boost to their confidence levels.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, every child is gifted, is my point of view. It's just not all in academics. So we just have
Yep.
to find those things that your kids are good at and focus on them. Definitely. Well, this has been such a good conversation, Heather. I definitely am just feel so grateful that you've shared all this with us. And sorry that your camera hasn't been working very well tonight. But at
I
least
know,
we
I
got the
see
sound.
the face I'm making is super awkward.
Oh, that happens. I can't tell you how many times when my son has edited my videos and put the weirdest picture that he could find on the still. But yeah, this is good, and I'm glad we can get your information out. So, your book will be coming out then within the next
We're
month or
just
so.
in the final stages, so we were hoping March, but definitely by the first week or two of April, if it's not out by the end of March. So if you go to the website, you can subscribe, and as soon as it's available, we will let you know.
Good. That's a good thing to know. And you're going to be speaking this spring. So can you tell us where you're going to be so our audience knows that as well?
Yes. I think in 2 weeks, March 16th, I'm going to be in Shreveport, Louisiana, for
Awesome.
just an afternoon encouragement time with the homeschool group there. So if you live anywhere near Shreveport, come join me. That would be a lot of fun. And then I am going to be speaking in Washington, the state of Washington, in April. I'm going to be speaking in Oklahoma City in May at their homeschool convention. I am going to be in Virginia at the HEAV convention in Richmond, Virginia in June, and then I will be in Phoenix, Arizona for the Arizona Homeschool Convention in July.
I'll see you there then. I'm going to be there as well.
Wonderful. It'll be fun to
Yeah.
meet in real life.
Yes. Even though we don't really live that far apart. But Texas is big. So.
Texas is huge.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much again for taking time out of your very busy schedule. As you can tell, Heather's got two websites and all this going on, and as well as homeschooling her four kids and speaking. So you definitely have a lot you're juggling, but taking time out tonight, we've just been blessed by what you've shared with us, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. I loved being here.
And there was one more comment by Dana Wilson. She had said, "Hi, Heather. I have to go back and watch this whole recording later. I'm a little late to the party." That's okay. The recording will be up on this page. And then also on Sunday, we'll be adding it to our YouTube channel. And it'll also be turned into a podcast. And so we'll give you links for that on Sunday. And whatever we can make out with the videos and when we had your camera working, we'll try to get some shorts out of it as well. So, but anyways, so thank you everybody for joining us. And I also want to thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding our broadcasts, and also for viewers like you who support Sped Homeschool. We are a nonprofit, and so all your donations are tax deductible. You can donate on our website. Next week, we're continuing our movement series, and we're going to do hands-on methods to help children engage with literature with Karen Thatcher, who is a speech and language pathologist who is just passionate about getting literature into every child's hand and helping them engage with it. So that's what we have coming next week, but let's keep the conversation going. Definitely join our Facebook support group and where we chat about a lot of things all week long. And I'll see you again here next week, everybody. Thanks for joining us and have a great night.